professional, but don't worry, people. We definitely have no idea what we're doing.
And they can't see us, so they don't even know if we look professional.
Even better, yeah. It's a shame, because with this microphone here, man, I'm looking like I know a thing or two.
That's what I was going to say. This is a guy, you should carry that around with you.
I know, I've got like this Dr. Lara vibe right now. Like, yes, caller. What can I do for you?
You should definitely, you know, bring that up to the pulpit on Sunday.
Just walk around with the microphone.
I'm professional.
That's right. I have a microphone. I'm a professional.
All right. Well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday.
Hey,
this is Patrick Nazaroff with me as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
Good. Good. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Coronavirus. Week 3 for us.
Well, here in Houston anyway, week a lot for other people, yeah.
For sure. Yeah, my wife and I spoke to some friends of mine who live in New York, and they said they're about like a week or a week and a half kind of ahead of us dealing with the corona symptoms because they got out of work and school a week before we did here in Texas. Yeah.
It's crazy times, man.
Crazy times.
Hey, absolutely. Apropos of nothing, I had this crazy brain thought as I was getting ready this morning. I think we should think about Beyond Sunday t-shirts.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm also aware that you and I would probably be the only ones that wear them, but whatever. I think it could be fun.
Yeah. It's sad that we're coming up with this idea after Katie leaves us, because Katie is very pro
branded t-shirt. Pro t-shirt for any and every event. Yeah. You got a birthday party, quinceañera, going out to brunch, whatever, t-shirts.
That is a little inside the office, but for every event, Katie was like, what if we made t-shirts? What about t-shirts? any event, doesn't matter. All right, so let's get started here. I've got some news for us.
All right.
From our friends over at Walmart.
We have friends at Walmart?
Friend of the podcast, Walmart. During the last 3 weeks, Walmart has seen increased sale of work shirts and a decreased sale of work pants.
Excellent. This is the world we live in. We now live in a pants optional world.
Yeah, and Walmart also owns Gap and Old Navy, so this is across all of their
Really? Walmart store owns brand. Gap and Old Navy?
I believe so. Yeah.
Wow. This is phenomenal information that I'm learning.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised too.
This is like discovering that Disney somehow owns food things. It's like I don't understand how this works.
Yeah, now I have certainly been a proponent of the Zoom mullet.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, of work top, loungy bottoms.
Sure, yeah. I see no problem. I mean, if they can do it on SNL on Weekend Update for, you know, the last, 30, 40 years, then certainly we can all do this now. Yeah. It's fine.
I'm not sure I've worn anything besides basketball shorts over the last 2 weeks, so.
You know, you do you, man. Whatever floats your boat. I'm not here to judge. I liked your basketball shorts for your preaching the other week. That was fun, you know.
Yeah, for listeners who didn't know, I preached at a Linton service, and I recorded from home, and I wore a button-up and then basketball shorts while I recorded it. Because, you know, you only saw the top, right? So you got to look profesh upstairs. Downstairs can be crazy.
Yeah. This has been my biggest struggle with wearing robes, like, in general, ever since I, you know, started as a pastor. It's like every week it's like this temptation of I could wear whatever I want and nobody's really going to know. But here at Lord of Life, we have that middle service that, you know, we don't robe for. So I have to still look professional under the robe. Can't just show up in my shorts.
If you're just doing waist up, you could like do like a robe cutoff.
Yikes.
And it's basically like a
little shorty robe.
Yeah, a little shorty robe. I think you can make it work.
Speaking of images that no one needs to have in their head ever.
I mean, you could be wearing loungy pants, like sweatpants underneath. That's
doesn't matter.
The shorty robe.
I don't care what I don't care what length of pant I'm wearing. The shorty robe just does not need to happen.
All right. So,
have you ever wondered why pants are plural?
Pants are plural?
Yeah. Like I wear one shirt. Even though it has two sleeves, I suppose, but the pants, like each leg is a pant,
yeah,
I guess.
That's interesting. I don't know why it's. It does make sense. Nobody.
These are
say,
things
I wear,
that I think about when I'm
today.
Stuck in quarantine with coronavirus stuff.
If you would somebody like, oh, I really like your pant, I think that they would.
Right, they'd think probably. That was weird. And I would think that was weird, but I don't understand why. Like,
yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, let's move on to, I don't know, our part one of our story tonight, because we've been, we pre-talked about what we're going to talk about tonight. So we have some ideas of where we're going to go. So this is from...
I mean, we do that every time, right? We always have some idea of where we're going.
Yeah. So, you know, usually. So, but we have a maybe a clearer direction.
Yeah. We maybe did more advanced work than we usually do.
So an article that both of us have read, mm-hmm. I believe, from Time Magazine by theologian N.T. Wright.
Yeah, I love N.T. Wright personally. He's got great stuff.
Me too. He's a really good guy, and he's very, very smart. And
I like you say that as if you're like close friends. Like, oh yeah, you know, me and N.T.
Wright, we go way back.
We go hang out.
I believe he is a British theologian.
That's my understanding, yeah.
And so in Time Magazine, I'll give you the headline here, even though we both read it. Christianity offers no answers about the coronavirus. It's not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So why don't you walk us through part of this Time Magazine article here, Pastor David, that, as you understood it, kind of some major points that he's getting to.
Well, I think the piece that I draw out of it that's perhaps most helpful for me comes at the last paragraph of the piece that I've been reading. And he says, it is no part of the Christian vocation to be able to explain what's happening and why. In fact, it is part of the Christian vocation not to be able to explain and to lament instead. And, you know, I think this is a really powerful thing for us to think about, because so often we turn to Christianity for answers. And that's really not what Christianity was intended to be about. It's not, you know, Jesus rarely provided answers. He did a whole lot more questions than he did answers. And man, we do so much harm when we try to associate answers with, especially with disasters that are happening in the world. I don't remember, I don't know if you remember when Katrina was hitting New Orleans. There was like this wave of pastors who were saying, oh, well, New Orleans is getting hit by this horrible, horrible hurricane because of all the sin that happens in New Orleans. Now, all right, let's back up. Yeah, there's lots of things that happen in New Orleans that I would probably say are not in line with God's plan for humanity, right?
Sure.
But if we look at like where Katrina hit and who was most damaged by Katrina, it was not Bourbon Street. It was not the places that perhaps we would consider to be at the heart of some of those activities. It was people who were already living on the edge or already in poverty or, you know, areas like that. And so we do a lot of damage to people and their ability to experience God when we try to associate rationale to the terrible stuff that happens, when really the terrible stuff that happens because we live in a broken world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not complicated. The world is broken, so bad stuff happens, and God is working to redeem that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oftentimes what I've seen is, you know, people who are saying those things of like, oh, the United States is hit with natural disasters because of X sin.
Right.
Whenever they're affected by a natural disaster, they don't necessarily come into like, well, what is my sin that I need to focus in on or address in my own heart or life? It's very, very easy to look at the world and say like, they over there might have the sin that God should punish. And much harder to look inwardly and say, I am deserving of punishment from God.
Yeah. Something about throwing stones in glass houses there, I think. Yeah,
something about that. But I do really appreciate this, because it's saying, like, it's okay. And one of the things that's really difficult for all of us, especially sometimes maybe as a pastor or faith leader, or is to say, like, I just don't know. Why is this happening? Yeah. Why is God allowing, a global pandemic? I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And maybe we can even say, and I'll never know. Like, and that's also okay. Like to say, like, I'm never going to get the answer that really makes sense, that has a easy correlation of one to two. You know, like, it'll be, well, here's good things I saw come out of it. And I'm really thankful for all these beautiful things that could come out of a tragedy like this, but that doesn't mean the tragedy happened to bring those good things out.
Right.
It just is this place about, I'm not sure.
Yeah. 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 I think we can think of it, you know, if we're looking like a child's behavior or something like that, right? I mean, you and I both have kids, and so we're figuring out how to handle that behavior. Our kids are going to do lots of things that we don't want them to do. We don't cause them to do this bad thing. But we might intervene in the aftermath of this bad thing and bring something good out of it, right? We might bring an opportunity for them to learn something, for them to experience something new, even though we didn't cause the bad thing to happen. You know, yeah. it was their own action that caused this glass to break or that caused this paint to spill. But we can step in and we can show them how to bring something good out of that. That's not a perfect analogy, but I think it's a helpful way to remember that, you know, because good comes out of something does not mean that the initial thing was caused to bring good. Those are not necessarily connected in that way.
Yeah. So one of the things that I do want to highlight here in this article here before we maybe move on is this idea of like lament itself.
Yeah.
Because I think this might be a lost practice of maybe the Western church of how to lament together. And so lament, if you're unfamiliar, is basically just like a crying out in anguish or agony. There's an entire book of the Bible dedicated to lamenting. Mm-hmm. It's 5 chapters long. It's about God.
Check it
Life
out.
Life is really hard. It's a poem. Are 5 poems, and they all are saying life is really, really hard. And sometimes in the midst of those poems, they point to hope and God, and sometimes they don't.
Right.
And the book of Lamentations ends in this very interesting we hope, and basically God is trustworthy. He will deliver us unless he doesn't, and we're doomed. So it kind of ends in this really weird dichotomy of this is where we're at as a people.
Yeah.
And if we look in the Old Testament, especially, you know, as a faith community, the Israelites lamented often, whether they were lamenting of slavery in Egypt, many of their worship songs and psalms have lament aspects to them. Basically, life is really, really hard.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't necessarily always get wrapped up in a nice bow at the end of that song.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it points to the goodness of God, and sometimes it's like life is really, really hard. I'm surrounded by enemies. God, don't forget me. And that's the rest of the song. That's it.
Yep.
You know, and that's what they would sing as a worship community. And I think that's one of the things that we've kind of forgotten is this ability to come together and just be like, life is hard. This is hard. It's hard for our world, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? We need to do a better job of lamenting as a faith community.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we've talked about this a little bit before, right? But as a community, we kind of want Christianity to be kind of that feel-good faith, right? We want to come in on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. We want to be made to feel better about whatever we did wrong or whatever went wrong in the world. We want to be encouraged and lifted up, and we want to leave church feeling happy, right? We don't want to leave church feeling down or feeling I don't necessarily want to say that we don't want to feel convicted, but I think a lot of us come to church and don't want to feel convicted. We don't want to have it pointed out to us all the ways the world is still in pain and still in heartbreak and still needs us to work on that. We want to come out of church feeling good. I have a pastor friend whose famous joke is, you know, I love that churches have praise bands, but I really want to meet a church that has a lament band, right? That we get a church that's honest about this, that we have an opportunity in our worship service to genuinely join each other in lamenting the world. And one of the things that I think is hard about this is that lament so often sounds, in our current context, so often sounds political, right?
Yeah.
And so if I want to lament, if I want to lament hunger in our community, well, it sounds like I'm critiquing a political policy that allows people to be hungry. Or if I want to lament people who are having to flee their homes in Central America and are dying trying to get into the United States, if I want to lament that fact, it sounds like I'm critiquing immigration policy. And that's not what the church has to be about. The church can be about, we're lamenting people are dying. We're lamenting people have to leave their homes. That is what we can lament, because we are fortunate enough as people living in the United States to not be having to leave our homes for our own safety. We're fortunate enough, you and I at least, we're fortunate enough that we don't have to worry about where our next meal is coming from. And so one way that we can connect with the heart of God is to lament those things that we know break God's heart, right? You know, that's something that N.T. Wright says in his article here. In Genesis, after Cain kills Abel, right? N.T. Wright goes on to write, "God was grieved to his heart," Genesis declares, "over the violent wickedness of his human creatures. He was devastated when his own bride, the people of Israel, turned away from him. And when God came back to his people in person," the story of Jesus is meaningless unless that's what it's about, "he wept at the tomb of his friend," right? So Jesus comes and Jesus laments at the tomb of Lazarus. That's what he's referencing there. And God has been weeping and lamenting over Israel's continued failure to live into the promise that God has for them, and their continued ability to leave behind the least and the poorest among them. We should be doing a better job of lamenting that fact, and we should be coming to. It should be okay for us to come to church and be a little bit bummed out because the world is not what God created it to be, right? Yeah. I mean, there's hope in church. There's an opportunity for joy and encouragement in church, but there's also a place for us to be convicted because the world is not what God intends it to be. And we have a responsibilities, maybe not the right word. We have a role to play in bringing about the justice that God desires for this earth.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, for us here in the Western world, it's interesting that kind of the first brunt of the coronavirus does land for us during Lent, a Lenten yeah. season. And N.T. Wright even will kind of address kind of this idea of like Lent during this time of like, you know, usually when we give things up to celebrate the sacrifices of God, they're not these things that we're giving up right now. It's much easier to right. give up chocolate, caffeine, potato chips than it is to give up community, seeing family and friends, human contact for some of our people, or being in corporate worship in a building. These are all things that we're all having to give up right now.
Yep.
And you know, I don't know if you've seen, there's like a little meme going around on Facebook or Twitter of like, I didn't expect to give up so much this Lent. You know, and so like, you know, it's kind of like, it's funny that here we are, and when this podcast releases, we'll be in the midst of Holy Week, so the culmination of Lent. So, you know, let's transition maybe into talking a little about Holy Week right now, because it's okay for us both to lament. We're not going to do Holy Week the way we have always understood how the church does Holy Week this year. Like, we're not going to have corporate worship on Thursday, on Friday, on Saturday, on Sunday. For our youth group, we won't have an Easter breakfast. We won't have, big ceremonies that are happening in a sanctuary filled with people. We're just not going to have those
things. I won't be up until midnight and then up at 4, you know.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. You know, good things. So how,
it's going to be weird. I like that. Like, yeah. I mean, it sounds, I don't know, masochistic, I suppose. But, you know, I love being up late and then getting up early. And it's an important piece of the tradition for me.
I'd like it for Easter and then be able to sleep in on Monday.
Right, sure. Yeah, that's a fair point. I don't want to do it every day. Let's not be crazy.
Yeah.
I guess I could still do it, and I could be in my Zoom mullet while I'm doing it. So, you know.
Yeah, so this does kind of affect, like, how do we address, like, here we are during this time of Lent, time of lamenting during Lent, and now we come into Holy Week, which has these two aspects of Christianity, both lamentation and celebration, back to back or side by side or even intertwined many ways. So basically these two extremes colliding on Easter weekend. How do we kind of rationalize those two things right now?
Yeah, you know, I think this is something I'm going to have hit on in my sermon that will have come out yesterday during Palm Sunday. I think that we're in an environment that gives us a unique connection to Holy Week that we've probably never had before in our life and may never have again in the same way, because so much has been cut off from us, because so much is different for us right now. I think we get a much deeper understanding of a piece of the experience the disciples themselves were going through during this week, right? To have suddenly have everything stripped away and yet still know that there's going to be something more coming, still, you know, faithfully try to live into that. And maybe not even entirely sure what that means, but you know, we're going to get to the end of Holy Week and we're still not going to know what the rest of coronavirus is going to look like. We're not going to know what that outcome is going to be, barring some sort of medical miracle that happens in the next week. But we're still going to have faith that there's another side to this story, that there's more that's coming. And so, you know, this movement, right, from Maundy Thursday through Good Friday into Easter morning, it is for me a really powerful reminder of what should be our daily existence as Christians, right? We should constantly be aware of those things that need to be put to death and looking for the places where God is raising up new life. That's what we should be about. And we haven't always done that very well. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of places where we've chosen to cling to lesser life rather than letting things be put to death, mm-hmm. As a church and as individuals. You know, there's an old story, which I'm not really a huge fan of it, but whatever. I think it kind of gets at the heart of this, where there's like a little girl, and the little girl's mom has given her this set of plastic pearls. And the little girl just loves these plastic pearls. Mm-hmm. And then the little girl gets a little older, and the mom says, "All right, sweetie, it's time for you to give me your pearls." And the little girl says, "No, mommy, just one more night." And the mom says, "Okay, but I'm going to ask you again tomorrow." And this goes on for like, I don't know, however many nights. Sure. You can make it as elaborate as you want. Goes on for a while. And then finally the little girl says, "Okay, mommy, you can have my pearls." And she gives them back to her mommy. And she's sad and she's brokenhearted. And the mom gives her a real set of pearls, right? Mm-hmm. That the girl had this thing she thought was what she wanted. And the mom had something even better in store for her if she was just willing to let go of this thing that she was holding on to, mm-hmm. as this prized possession. And I think we as the church have done this a lot. And we in our faith do this a lot. And this Holy Week is a particular reminder for us where we've suddenly had things taken away from us, right? We didn't have a choice anymore. Nobody came to us and said, "Hey, would you all like to give up worshiping as a community on Easter this year?" Right? That wasn't a choice that we had put before us. And I'm confident that if we had just been given that choice, all of us would have said, "No, we don't want to give that up. For lots of good reasons, we want to be together on Easter." Mm-hmm. But hey, in this Holy Week, we're going to experience what it's like to not be together in Easter, and maybe we're going to learn something new about how God is operating in the world. Maybe we're going to learn something new about what it means for us to be a community gathered in faith. I don't think it's going to stop us from gathering together on Easter in the future. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is suddenly going to say, "All right, the new tradition is that we always have Easter worship online." I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think that it can help us live into new realities that God might be painting for us.
Yeah, I definitely really like that idea of, like, I think...
Oh, well, thanks.
If we look at, like, our lamentations, we would say, like, sometimes as a church community, we don't know how to handle famine very well, but on mm-hmm. Easter sometimes we forget how to handle feast very well, of like, how do we really celebrate joy in the midst of suffering? How do we really come together and say, life is really, really hard, I'm unsure of where these things are, how things are going to happen, or what's going to happen next for our world, for our community, for my family, and yet I can celebrate deeply in joy that Christ is risen. And so I think, I do like that analogy. So that means like letting go of the fake pearls we've been clutching to grab on to the real ones that come through the risen Lord. And that doesn't mean we're ignorant or we're turning a blind eye to our own circumstances or suffering, but it's pointing us to saying, like, there's a celebration deeper and bigger than whatever is going into our world and into my life right now. That the resurrection points to that, a joy far greater than anything I could ever possibly experience. And now maybe puts that into a real perspective of, like, this Sunday, you know, my family will worship together a risen Lord in a completely different way than we've ever had to do before. And yet Jesus still reigns and Jesus still lives. And we can point to those things that even though it's completely different, we're celebrating Christ, the risen Christ here. And I think that's really neat that here for all of us, we maybe get to experience in a small way what the early church felt that first Easter, devastation and elation all at the same time, and feeling separated from the world, a feeling like we're hidden behind closed doors, unsure of what happens next, and then Jesus appears and is revealed, and we all get to experience that on Easter Sunday. Here's Jesus revealed. And it doesn't look exactly like we would want in this world right now. You know, all of us would want, hey, Jesus to be revealed, cure us all, cure our world of this pandemic or the greater pandemic of sin that's going on in each of us. And we all get to move on to the next life. But that's probably not going to happen. instead, we get to celebrate the hope that is coming on Easter Sunday, and I think that's pretty amazing.
I think it'll be good. I've talked to a lot of communities, a lot of pastor colleagues and things like that, trying to figure out how we're all going to be doing Easter. And Lord of Life has kind of said, we're going to do Easter online. We're going to do it the best we can, and we're going to do it when it is. Some communities are making this kind of conscious choice to say, we're going to wait, and we're going to hold off and celebrate Easter when we're able to be back together in our in our space, which, you know, in its own way, is kind of maybe holding on to something, but it's also letting go of this kind of time, or the sense of time, right? The sense of Easter has to be this Sunday. No, Easter, I mean, in its most literal sense, every Sunday is supposed to be a celebration of Easter. That's kind of what the intention was. So to come back together and say we can celebrate Easter anytime, I think is another very valuable reminder for the church to say this feast is not a one-time thing.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe the Easter breakfast is a one-time thing, but this feast is not. This feast is every time we gather together as the body, even if it's, you know, you and me gather together in a Zoom call with our business up top and a party down below, whatever it might be. It's still an opportunity for us to come together and to celebrate the resurrection of the Lord. And in the midst of our grief and suffering, we come together to celebrate the resurrection of the Lord. In the midst of our joy and celebration, we come together to celebrate the resurrection of the Lord, right? This is what every worship service ever has been supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're going to be able to be drawn into that reality a little bit more fully in this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's amazing. I think this could give birth to new traditions, new ways to experience the resurrection of Christ, new ways for churches to say, what do we do when we are missing a building, and how do we operate? Yeah. You know, These are things that Christians all around the world have had to deal with, and now we're having to deal with here in the West in a very real way. And so, like, what happens now? And regardless of how. Some churches are going to do amazing online worship. Some churches are not going to do amazing online worship. They're going to figure out, you know, they're still working with their own technological limitations. But regardless of how it looks for you at home, Christ is risen. Even if you don't tap into it, even if you sleep in, watch TV, and don't worship, Christ is still risen. And that's the amazing part of what Easter means, is even for the non-believers in our world, Christ has still reigned over death, and that's amazing.
Christ's resurrection is not Tinkerbell that depends on all of us to clap for it to be true, right?
Sure. No, yeah.
Christ's resurrection is true regardless of who's clapping and who's not.
Well, since many of us may be looking at some new traditions for our families on Easter, I actually have some global traditions.
This is where we sing the song from Fiddler on the Roof.
For sure. My wife loves that musical, so.
Really?
Oh yeah,
I've seen it once. I think
she's half Jewish, so their family definitely has a connection to Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay,
it's about a Jewish guy.
I mean, I get that. I just there are lots of things about Christians that doesn't mean that I have a greater connection to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it was good though, maybe.
That's
right?
True. That's a fair point.
Sometimes there's a lot of things about Christians that aren't.
If it were a Tony-winning Broadway musical, then maybe, yeah.
Sure. For Les Mis, like, I have a deeper connection to that, I think, because of its Christian themes, because I agree with them. So,
yeah.
All right, so.
But not the movie version of Les Mis, because Hugh Jackman just should not be singing.
Russell Crowe's, ugh. All right, so.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was rough. Jackman, is that even the right movie?
Yeah, Hugh Jackman's in it. He plays Jean Valjean. All right, so
that's right.
Here's a few. I have a list of 12, but I'm not going to go through all.
All right.
So
okay. In
no particular order. Czech Republic and Slovakia. This is a global tradition they have. If you're a woman there, you might want to stay at home, which is probably good advice for us right now, because all the local boys will walk around with switches adorned with ribbons to whip the women.
What?
Yes. It's not meant to be painful.
In celebration of Easter?
To encourage good health and beauty.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that you may be more beautiful, let me hit you with my switch. Yeah. That
absolutely
makes good sense.
Here's also in Russia. This is one you can do at home. The Easter...
please don't do that first one at home. Please.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could. But
nope, please don't.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go on record and saying Beyond Sunday does not support that particular tradition.
In Easter, in Russia, they bake a lamb out of butter to put on their Easter meal table.
So they sculpt a butter lamb.
Yeah. Any guesses on why they use a lamb?
Probably something about Jesus being the Passover lamb would be my guess.
No. Well, I mean, close. It's because you know it's not Satan. Because Satan can take the form of many animals, but not the lamb.
But not
lamb,
a lot.
Right,
because sure,
that's Jesus.
Okay.
Yep.
Sure, okay.
If you're looking for, you know, a new food to eat here in Colombia, you can follow them.
I want to request that our listeners submit their butter sculpture pictures onto our Facebook page.
Absolutely, yeah. Colombia here, the chocolate eggs, bunnies, they're not going to eat those things. Instead, their traditional Easter feast is iguana, turtles, and rats.
All right, do it up.
Yeah.
Go to it. What'd you say with Colombia?
Colombia, yeah.
All right, go to it, Colombia.
All right, I'm going to fast forward here. It looks like my son is waking up, so I'm going to have to go in just a second.
Dun, da, da, da.
Yeah.
We'll just do it without you. It's fine. I'll just make up global traditions.
Sure. In Papua New Guinea.
Hey, my dad used to live in Papua New Guinea.
Oh, well, he
was
might be
He was a missionary there. Yeah, I'll ask him.
Easter churches are decorated with tobacco and cigarettes instead of traditional symbols or the Easter eggs, tobacco and cigarettes, which are handed out after the service. It's like a little take home. Here's a pack of cigarettes for everybody.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask my dad about that one. He's not a smoker, so that'll be interesting to hear what he said. Yeah.
Me neither. And then in Norway, Easter time.
Norway's got lots of fun traditions.
They do. You know, Northern Europe has got some crazy things happening. Uh-huh. Easter time is crime time in Norway.
Ooh, okay.
Television channels and books are released all celebrating whodunits that people celebrate over the Easter weekend. So it's normal for them to binge a whodunit show or read a whodunit book during this time.
Is this like a connection to the mystery of who killed Jesus? Is like who framed Roger Rabbit / who?
Well,
who framed Judas Iscariot? I don't know.
So I believe in 1923, a mystery book came out right at Easter time that everybody was reading at once, and now it became a tradition. And even their milk cartons at Easter time will have like little detective stories on the sides that you can try to solve as a family. So I think that's pretty fun.
We're gonna be including some detective stories in our publications now for Easter. That's gonna be great.
We can try that.
We've got a couple families from Norway at Lord of Life, so maybe they'll appreciate our embracing their heritage.
So there you go. All the things you would want. And I think what we talked about last year is actually my last one here. The world's biggest omelet is made in France on Easter. Probably not this year.
Did we talk about the world's biggest omelet?
We did. We talked about it. They stir it with like giant oars instead of spoons.
Yeah.
So
I know we talked about giant food. I didn't remember an omelet in particular.
Feeds over 1,000 people. All right. So how we're going to do this is, Pastor David, if you could tell us where you can find us.
I will do that.
And I'm going to go get my son, who's awake.
All right. That's cool. So I'm going to tell us where they can find us, and I'll sign off for us, and you have a great day.
Sounds good. All right. Bye, everybody. All right. I'll do that right now.
Bye, Patrick.
Yes.
Hey, while Patrick is leaving, if you have liked what you heard today, be sure to check us out at beyondsundaypodcast.com. You can find all of our episodes there. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, wherever delectably, theologically sound podcasts are available for your Easter tradition consumption. We hope that you are going to have a blessed Holy Week, however you are able to celebrate this week. We hope that you're able to do that. If you're looking for a way to connect online, Lord of Life will have our services on Maundy Thursday and Good Friday, as well as Easter morning, available for you. Those will be on our Lord of Life Facebook page and also at lordoflifeonline.org. So a very blessed Holy Week to all of you, and we will see you next week when we'll be talking about something else. Have a great day.